Good morning, everyone. We continue on today in Perek Yud Zayin of Sefer Shoftim. We have, maybe I misspoke last week, we have several prakim left in the Sefer, in Sefer Shoftim. There are really two major stories that round out, in a very depressing and sad way, but they round out the Sefer. One we began last week is the story of Pesel Micha. And the second is the story of Pilegesh Begiva, Israel's first essentially civil war that takes place. We discussed last week how it's not clear when exactly these episodes took place. Some place these at the beginning of the Sefer, but for a number of reasons, as we discussed last week, they were placed at the end of the Sefer. To avoid, whatever, for a variety of reasons. So we were discussing the story of Micha, or Michayahu was his original name. Michayahu had stolen from his mom 11,000 kikar kesef, and they're from Har Ephraim, right? And he tells his mother, sorry, by the way, I stole all this from you, and here I'm returning it. And there's a back and forth. There's the whole tzitzuch. Because she made a neder. Whoever takes the money from me, I'm going to, use it. There's me a klala on that person. And I have to use it for hekdesh. In the end of the day, she took this money, gave it to a silversmith. And the silversmith fashioned it into a trough, into an idol, into a pesel, in which Michayahu's name was, the psukim just changed the name to Micha. They dropped the yud hey at the end of his name, implying that he left God. He dropped that name. It's like the modern day equivalent of somebody growing up with a very, very, the Hebrew name, and they were called that their whole life, and they completely dropped that name, not for business reasons, but for identity reasons. And they want to, disassociate themselves with that identity of what that name represented. And that's really where we left off, where we had this. And Micha continues to build around this pesel, where we saw that he made the pesel other idols around it, made a separate house for it, and also employed a person to be the Kohen / Levi in this temple. So it started off as a innocuous pesel or small thing, slowly was becoming something bigger and bigger and bigger. That's the way things happen. Nobody wakes up one day and says, I want to worship idols. That's my sole intention in life. I want to be the guy that's in charge of the base of Avodah Zarah in Har Ephraim. But it happened slowly. So he started, Michayahu initially employed his son, but his son wasn't good enough because his son didn't have the lineage of the Kohanic dynasty. Eventually, and this is really where we left off in Pasuk Vav and Zayin. Vayinar mibeis lechem Yehuda, mishvachas Yehuda, who Levi, who garsham. And it happened to be that a Levi was passing through town. And that's a normal thing. It's a Levi from Beis Lechem Yehuda. Yehuda is a region of, Beis Lechem is a region of Shevet Yehuda. Levium didn't have their own land. The goal of Levium was to influence other people. Therefore, they didn't have their own land. They lived in other people's lands, where they had a separate portion called Stei Migrash, which belonged to them. And they had Ari Levium. There are 42 Ari Levium around the entire country. And that's where he lived. And Vayilach Ha'ish Me'a'ir Mi'beis Lechem, Yehudah Lagor Ba'asher Yimsa. So he, Mefarshim say there's no space for him, or he felt like he didn't have his own space. He wanted a mission. He wanted to be more involved. So what do? If you live in town, Beis Lechem Yehuda is a in-town place. So he was looking for a smaller town where he can have more of an influence. He can you know, make a difference and have an impact on his community, which is a, on first glance, first blush, a very noble thing, right? For somebody to say, I'm going to take my talents out of the New York, New Jersey area and move to a small town. Wonderful. So he went and said, I'm going to go to a place, Bashar Yimsa, Vayavohar, Ephraim Ad Beis Micha, Lasos Darko. He went to the house of Micha, Lasos Darko, to do his, how would anyone define the word Lasos Darko? It's a tough word to translate here, Lasos Darko. So the Mesudas David says very simply, Lasos Darko, the Lecha Zadarko Derechba. He just went, he walked, he went. And the Radak writes also, he happened upon the house. He didn't ever intend to be working and be an employee of the Pesel Micha Institute, but ended up being Kolomer Ad Beis Micha, Velo Lechavna, the Kavana Shiamucham. He never intended to become an idol worshiper or the face of the franchise of the idol worshiping seminary, you know, part of the Jewish nation. He never intended for that, but that's the way that it starts. It starts slowly and it creeps up on you. Vayomer lo Micha. Me'ayin tavo. So Micha sees this fellow and he says to this guy, where are you coming from? Vayomer lo Levi Anochi, I'm a Levi. Mi beis lechem Yehuda. Vayanochi holeich lagor bashir emsa. And I am going to live where I'm going to find. I'm not comfortable where I am. And I'm going to find a place. I'm looking for a place. Do you have a place? Notice that he gave more information, right? We call this in Yiddish, TMI. Just kidding. Too much information. So Micha asked him, Me'ayin tavo, right? Where do you come from? So what did the guy answer him? This Levi said, I'm from Beis Lechem and I'm looking for a place. Micha was not interested in where he was going. What Micha wanted from the next person, he was looking for a guy that had good yichus. Because to put up this ruse and keep this up, he needed somebody that was going to be part of a significant lineage. And we learned this wasn't any random Levi that he was, that was, you know, serving in this place, but this was the son of Gershom, who is the son of Moshe Rabbeinu. We are talking about now, this Levi is Moshe Rabbeinu's grandson. They don't say that explicitly here. It does come up at the end of the next parak. They spell that out. But we pointed out that when the pasuk says, well, who garsham, if you put the two words, gimel rei, shin mem, together, you get who gershom, to show us. And the implication of how far people can fall off just two generations later. Vayomer lo micha, so he says where, so he gives more information. Not just where I'm going, but I don't know. I don't have a future. I don't really know where I should be going. I'm lost, and I'm looking for a place. I'm looking for a place to go to. I need, and you see there how important it is for people to be part of a community where they feel that they're making an impact, that they're making a difference. Everybody has a natural, every human being has a natural feeling that they want to be part of a place, not only that they feel they belong, but they feel that they're there and they matter. That measures differently for different people. Some people need to be in charge. Some people need to be part of something. They need to be part of committees. They need to be, we all need that. That's why communal life, Jewish communal life, having minyanim every single day, right? It holds people not just accountable, which you could look at it that way, but it holds us that we feel like we're needed, and it's true. We are all needed by the community. It's set up that way, but we need to create more systems where that is, because this issue all stemmed from him. Vayomer lo Micha, shvai madin. So Micha says to this, you know, lost soul, stay with me. Ve'yeli la'av u'lachoin. Micha sensed from this young man that he was lost and he needed a place to stay. Vanochi etein lacha aseres kesef liyamin. I'll give you 10 silver coins per year. U'michyascha, and not only that, I'll give you food, I'll give you clothing, I'll give you room and board. It's a great job. Vayelech ha-Levi, right? And the Levi went, right? He offers him, like it's almost like an offer you can't refuse. He's looking for a place to stay. He's looking to make an impact in the place that he lives. And he gives him three things. This is the way the Malbim spells it out. Number one, Shiva Imadi. You see the Malbim on the side. Live here and don't be wandering. Number two, I'm going to give you a job where you are mechubad. You're going to be honored and you're going to matter. You're going to be the Av and the Kohen, not just the priest, but people are going to look at you as a fatherly figure. And number three, we're going to take care of you and support you financially. Mitzad Aschar, Etein Lecha Aseres Kesef Liyamim, Lashana, the Erech Begadim, Michyascha, give you clothing and food, right? And you're going to be treated nicely. So three levels. You'll feel comfortable. You have a place to stay, a makom in the community. You'll feel respected and you'll be supported. Now, if you ever want to have family, whatever it is, we're going to recognize and appreciate what you do for us, which is amazing, right? So this is really the components to what people, all of us, are looking for within a community. Vayoel Halevi Lasheves. Immediately, Vayoel is a language of agreement. The Malbim writes Nisratza. It's more than just agreeing, but he was very pleased. From the word Ritzei Hashem Nuchasenu, right? Ritzei, he felt very pleased by this. Lashebes is a ish v'ilah na'ar lo k'achami banav. And Micha treated this young man like one of his kids. The Malbim says, how do you treat somebody like one of your kids? Ochel alch shulchano. He ate at his table. V'acharkach ayadei sheyasha b'beis rasha nigra acharav. Unfortunately, what happened was, is that people that help you out in this way, they have a big influence on you. So Micha had a big influence on this young and impressionable and wayward Levi, right? To the point now, right, that Levi didn't know what he's signing up for. Vayamalei Micha as Yad HaLevi. And that's really what's missing here, is that this Levi was so lost, unfortunately. And you see this, if somebody is so lost, they can get into the craziest of things because they just want to belong. They just need to feel like they belong. And if they don't have a place where they belong, they're going to go anywhere else where they feel loved, where they feel supported. This young Levi never asked, hey, what do you guys do here? What responsibility do I need? By the way, what do you need a Kohen for in the middle of Har Ephraim? It's not the Mishkan. They're not slaughtering and bringing, maybe they need korbanos. Maybe you're allowed to bring korbanos before the Beis Mikdash was around. You could have brought a Bama and needed a Kohen or a Levi to help you out. But it's not clear because he never really asked, because maybe it didn't really matter. It didn't matter what he was going to do, because what he needed only was just a feeling of love and support.
Rabbi.
Yeah.
So you said this is Moshe's grandson. Is there any other places? Because honey and I are here both talking. about hearing about of any Moshe's children and grandchildren. It sounds like it's almost very silent about, you know, who, what happened to them. And it just seems that the, if this is the probably the one of the few times that they mentioned the telling a story about going down a wrong track, it would seem that that's the example that it may be all of Moshe's children and grandchildren follow that same direction.
Well, we don't know where his children landed, right? We really don't know much. It doesn't mean that there's no, I don't know much. There could be that there is more out there on this topic.
But sometimes you do have great people. Sometimes they have to give all their kayach to everything that they're doing. And sometimes their children do go on the wayside. It's known to happen a lot of times.
It's actually a syndrome. It's called children of clergy members. It's not just for the rabbinate. But it's also for the, it's a real thing. You can Google it. Jewish Action had a whole dedicated a whole article, a whole magazine to it a bunch of years ago. A friend of mine wrote an article about it also, a lot of research on it as well. It's a real thing. It's a real thing.
This Israel Salanta put an ad in the paper that he would give his fortune if someone could bring his son back to him who had strayed off the door.
Really? Yeah. But that is an important notion here, but I think there's a lot to glean from here. Chazal see not one mistake, but a reality that happened. A reality that happened is that Moshe left his children, you know, in Midian with Tzipporah and with Grandpa Yisro, Zaydi Yisro. I feel like Yisro is more of a Zaydi than a grandpa. No? So because of that, the kids never experienced Yetzias Mitzrayim. They never experienced Kriyas Yamsav Mechamas Amalek. And according to many Mefarshim, they never experienced Matan Torah. According to Rashi, they never experienced Matan Torah. Now, beside for the fact that Moshe was very busy, their mother wasn't, right? So their mom was with them. They did not experience and go through those moments with all of Klal Yisrael, which really forged and imprinted a certain way and a certain feeling that the Jewish people had all together. And that was significantly lacking from their childhood experience. And while people can place blame on the parents, maybe that reality also is very difficult. We can't place blame on anybody, but we could use their story to learn from in terms of what we need to do for the next generation. Experiences matter, right? That matters. The Lubavitcher Rebbe most famously pointed out that there really are 5 children of the Seder. There aren't 4. There's a Chacham, Rasha, Tam, and Sheni De'Alishol, but there's a 5th child. We don't know the 5th child's name because the 5th child never showed up at the Seder. Right? We all know people that are no longer doing the Seder, no longer involved in the Jewish ritual life. And at the very least, right, the Rasha is there. And there's no criticism that the Russia should get his way. If you have someone at your Seder that is not following exactly the same way that everyone else is doing, there should not be any comments, jokingly or not jokingly, any critique at all there, because we should be happy that they are at the Seder, period. That's it. And the Rebbe used to emphasize this point, that we are celebrating the Russia. We have to learn about how to talk to the Russia, what type of questions the Russia asks, how to answer him or her the right way. And there definitely are wrong ways, but at least they're there at the Seder. There are so many that aren't there. And if you're not there, then you can't catch any of the love, any of the experiential part of Yiddishkeit. And that's a tragedy. That's a tragedy on its own. It's so important to bring the next generation to a lot of, you know, events. You know, halavai, right? If people knew more about, I read this recently, if, you know, if secular Jews knew less about Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur and more about Purim and Simchas Torah, maybe we'd be different. Maybe it would be different. You know, there's a certain mood in the shul of Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, which is not for everybody. It's part of our life. It's part of the Jewish calendar. It's there. It's important. It's necessary. But if they knew more about the other parts, then maybe they would look at Judaism quite differently. No, but this is something to think about here. This is really the subtext then of the story is about creating meaningful spaces for people to connect in a meaningful way. Here, you have a kid. He wanted to connect. He was looking for a way to give meaning to his lineage, to his Mesorah of being a proud Levite, to being a proud Levi. And it just was harnessed in the wrong way because he was so susceptible to any love and support from anybody that he took it. And unfortunately, Micha himself abused it. Micha abused he abused that trust that this Levi gave to him. Go ahead, Jules.
So where would that child be? He's not a Russia. He's not a Shane Day Elishel. Someone who goes up to Derek, for example. It's really the fifth child that you're talking about.
Yes, so I don't like the term off the Derek.
You can't say Shane Day Elishel. He probably was brought up where he does know. And he's certainly not a Russian.
Right. So I don't like the term off the derech because we're really all on our, that the implication of that is that there's only one derech. And we all know that's not true, right? If I went around the Zoom room here and we said, okay, how'd you get to where you are? We all have different drachim. So it's not really that someone's off the derech. Everybody's on their own path. Everyone has their own journey, their own narrative that we're always writing throughout our own lives. And we're all growing in our own ways. And I don't think we should fit kids into boxes. There's not like, oh, this is the Russia, this is the Inadisha Lishol, this is the Tam. I'm very careful. We like to go around, everyone reads paragraphs. So very sensitive. I don't say, okay, you read the Russia. I will say, like, you read Maisa Berlozer. You'll read whatever is next, Baruch HaMalkum Baruch. You'll start the song. I'll go around there, but when it gets to the kids, I don't do that. Because I don't want my kids to even have an implication. You're the Chacham, you're the Rasha. I'll say, okay, who would like to read the next one? Just because kids are thinking, and there is a lot of vying for airtime and space at the Seder, because everyone wants to be heard, and that's a good thing, and it's good to get everybody involved, to be sensitive to it. No one fits into a box, and all of us, the Kedusha Slavi writes, and many other Rebbes, that we all have all four sons inside of all of us, right? We all have a little piece of the Chacham, a little piece of the Tam, of the Shein Yodei Lishol. There's places and spaces that we don't even know what to ask. And then we all have the Rasha inside of us too. We all have that piece inside of us. Okay, Vayamalei.
Rabbi?
Yeah, yes, go ahead.
Yeah, are you allowed to invite somebody who was from and is no longer from to come to the Seder knowing that he'll drive on Yantav?
Yes, this is a big, big halachic topic and conversation. In short, there's three opinions on this. The one extreme is no. If you know they're going to violate any halacha, driving to come to your Shabbos meal, your Seder, they can't come. It's a lifnei iver. That's what we're dealing with here. The other extreme is, of course, they can come. This is Moshe Sternbach. The first opinion is Moshe Feinstein. Second opinion is Moshe Sternbach, great posting in Eretz Yisrael and Har Nof. He writes that, yes, you can invite them. Why? Because there's a cost benefit. You're right, they're violating halacha, but what would they be doing instead? I don't know what they would be doing instead, but it's probably better for them to be at the Seder than to be somewhere else. And therefore, you can invite them without any limitations. Shlomo Zalman Orbach writes the middle approach, where he suggests that you offer them a place to stay. And if they say no, like, oh, sleep over, you know, then they can come without any other, you know, conditions. Those are three approaches. You can discuss it privately. I think every one of these cases deserves its own, you know, personal analysis. Every case is unique. I think there's probably a difference whether it's a family member or it's a community or somebody that's looking to grow, or it's somebody that will not have any, have zero Jewish experiences, whether it's a coworker, somebody you met on the subway, or someone you met at the post office. I think there are different ways to navigate this, and how, and if they're going to say no anyway, or they're going to be brushed off or thrown off by you offering a place for them to stay. I think there are other ways to do this to minimize, etc. But I'm happy to talk to anybody about this personally. Okay.
But if you know they're driving, you're causing an error.
But it's also better for them to be at the Seder than not. Right? That's the argument. That's the argument. I think that needs to be factored into this conversation.
Rabbi, Chabad exists on the policy of their allowing people to come to the davening on Shabbos and to Sedarim, even if they drive. Chabad is the one who's being Makarev. So Chabad believes in allowing people to do this.
It's not just Chabad.
But I'm saying, but all of Chabad allows this. I mean, that's basically their philosophy.
Correct.
So we shouldn't go knocking, allowing people to do this.
We shouldn't allow people to do it because they're doing it instead of us?
No. We should be open-minded and allow to be Makarev as much as possible and take the philosophy, that's my opinion, that whatever they get from coming to davening and coming to Seder is better than they would have experienced if they were staying home, because they would have had nothing.
Yeah, I agree. I'm happy to talk about this. Yeah. What I feel is that, you know, you have a family member who they know that, you know, you have to ask them certain questions. And how do they feel when you have to ask them? Listen, my rabbi said, I have to ask you, you want to sleep over? We know the answer is going to be no, because there's no way you're going to sleep over my house because you want to go back home at night. So by asking that question, it almost like undermines, like they're rolling their eyes. And I think you lose a part of the relationship. It might be different if the person is someone that's growing in their Judaism, that really wants to know, that is sincere, and you can explain to them more. And there are also ways to avoid. They're like, listen, do what you want to do, but do me a favor, park a half a block away. Or come before Shabbos, come before Yom Tov. And you don't have to tell them, just tell them, like, come at 7, I need your help to help prepare. And this way they're only driving home and not driving there, right? Maybe the first Seder is better than the second Seder, or if that's an option. Or both Seder, you know, I think there's a lot, it is important to make space for this and to be open to having people over at the Seder that, you know, to expose them to an authentic Seder. I think it's very, very important. I do think that.
Would it be better for the second Seder since it's really Chol HaMoed?
I don't know. The first Seder has something special to it. You can argue the first Seder is better because it's Deraisa. On that, based on what you're arguing, you know, L'shitascha, Yossi, that the second Seder is rabbinic in nature, then give them the real Deraisas. Give them the first night. You can argue either way. And they're getting a Shabbos meal too out of the whole deal. You can make that argument both ways. We generally don't like to use that as a kula when it comes to the second day of Yom Tov, because then we're just going to treat the second day, you know, a lot more lenient in general, lighter in general. So Rabbi Yudin likes to quote, you know, he used to quote that every single year. So we like try to avoid that issue. Here, where I think it's maybe nicer. Recently, someone asked me this question. So I said, someone's sibling is no longer observant. So I said, have them come over at 5 o'clock. Tell them you need help with your kids. And they called me back and they said they really appreciate it because now they feel like they're part of the Pesach prep, right? Because I really need your help. That's something that's important. That's important for them to feel like they're included too and they matter as part of this conversation. You know, again, no situation is created equal, and I'm happy to talk to people about it privately. Let's just finish up. Thank you for bringing up that topic. It's a very, very important topic. Vayomer Micha. Vayomer Micha Tayadati. Sorry, Vimalei Micha as Yad Halevi, Vayilo Hanar, Lechohen, Vives Micha. Micha inducted, right, this man as the Levi in. Right, not just a Levi, but also as a Kohen in the Beis Micha. Vayomer Micha Atayadati ki etiv Hashem li kaya li haLevi akomi. Micha now told himself, God must have accepted me. God loves me because he brought me a Levi. Right, this shows us the power of rationalization, the power of us convincing ourselves that whatever we're doing must be what God wants us to do because God is helping me out, right? The guy that steals millions of dollars and no one's catching him, or the investment that he uses afterwards to invest the money is working, God must be okay with me stealing the money because I'm giving some money to tzedakah. That's the power of the Yetzer Hara, right? So Micha is saying you're the same thing. I started an idol, you know, a house of idols, of idol worship, based on Avodah Zarah. There never was one amongst the Jewish people ever in history from Terach until now, right? We mentioned Terach at the Seder. And at this moment, a Levi knocked on my door, right? So he's saying, his rationalization is, God must be on my side. Who says? Maybe God was telling you to wake up and like show you how crazy this is that you're ending up being, you know, worshipping idols and running a whole house. Terrific. But we always like to find ways and excuses or, you know, ways that we are always doing the right thing. So there's a lot of messages in this story. Well, we're going to take a break for Shoftim. After Pesach, we will continue with Perek Yudches, which shows us the fallout of this, because after time, word is going to spread about Pesach Micha and this, you know, house of love and prayer. And we are going to learn what exactly that means for the rest of Klal Yisrael. Wish everybody a great day.
So, Rabbi.